Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You know, I would have to quote Eric Liddell. I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. So that is what running means to me. And it's a gift. It's, you know, especially when you've been injured, you really appreciate what you had when you don't have it. So the fact that I've been healthy for quite a while now, I'm blessed and honored, and you know, I love it. I'm passionate about it. I'm motivated to do it.
On this episode of The Rundown, I drove down to Ottawa to speak with marathon mom, Olympian, and dietitian Krista Duchesne. Growing up, she played hockey over the winter and ran in the summer, creating a balance in her life. Her breakthrough came after her win at the Mississauga Marathon on Mother's Day. In 2016, she ran in the Rio Olympics, and in 2018, at the age of 41, she finished third at the Boston Marathon. The results speak for themselves, and Krista is proving that age is only a number. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, on May 22nd, 71-year-old Bjorn Sundsen of Sweden completed his seventh unsupported run across the U.S. He ran from L.A. to New York and covered 5,050 kilometers over 97 days, pushing all his gear in a running stroller. His first successful run across America was 12 years ago, at the age of 59. His running routine definitely helped him take on this ambitious goal. At this point, Sundsen says the running is almost secondary. This time around was more about enjoying his surroundings and the people he met along the way. Although he'd like to make an eighth attempt, he did mention the running has become increasingly more dangerous, with traffic and bad roads. So we'll have to wait and see. Caster Semenya, a South African two-time Olympic gold medalist, is at the forefront of a fight against the International Association of Athletics Federations. She filed an appeal Wednesday, June 5th, against the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which has upheld new rules for athletes with differences of sex development, or DSD. Their new rules require women with naturally high levels of testosterone to use drugs to reduce those levels in order to compete at distances between 400 meters and 1 mile. Caster and her legal representatives believe that these rules are a human rights violation. They brought their case to the Swiss Federal Tribunal, who ordered the IAAF to suspend its female regulations with immediate effect. This is great news for Semenya, who can once again compete freely. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. For those who are familiar with the Boston Marathon, 2018 was one of the worst conditions out there. And I'm sitting with somebody today who finished third that day, in Krista Duchesne. So thank you so much for joining us on The Rundown.
Thanks. I'm glad to speak with you.
I'm glad you're here. This is kind of like an interesting weekend. Ottawa race weekend's always fun, and happy that we got to connect and just meet this morning. So this is a nice surprise.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad to be in Ottawa. It's just a beautiful city.
Awesome. As I asked most of our guests, I always like to find out kind of like, what was your childhood like as like growing up, and were you athletic, and kind of how that went?
Well, I was very active. My mom used to say I was the most energetic of six kids. I was the second youngest. And I often tell people that she used to lock me out of the house and make me run laps around and around before she let me back in, because I had so much energy. So I guess you could say that, yes, I was athletic. It was shown to be early that that was a potential for me. I played hockey at the age of four and did all sports in elementary school. And then when I got to high school, running and hockey were definitely my two most passionate sports.
Awesome. And kind of how did that, was it just a, like you just did it for fun at that point? Or was there any kind of like competitions that you would be doing at a young age?
Well, I think in elementary school, I did everything, soccer, volleyball, basketball, because it was just the sport that you did, and I did every sport that was available, but certainly I loved the running and the hockey. So when I got to high school and I knew that I was, you know, the best at those events and I liked them the most, that's what I turned to and didn't do any other sports. So at the end of high school, I had to choose between hockey and university in terms of where I wanted to, between hockey and running. So when I was going to university, and I chose Guelph because they had a good women's ice hockey program and a good nutrition program.
Okay. And nutrition is kind of like where you went into your studies, I guess?
Yeah, right. I got my Bachelor of Applied Science in Guelph, and then I did my internship in Kingston.
Okay. And do you feel like the hockey background kind of has helped you in your running career? Because I find even myself, like growing up playing hockey, like I only started running maybe like 9 years ago. So, but I find that it's given me a good base for that. Do you find it's the same with you?
I think there's a few advantages to having done hockey. One, it's a team sport. So it's nice to have a balance between a team sport and an individual sport, which running tends to be. I guess that's where cross-country running is great, because you can run as an individual and part as a team. But the other thing is that I think there's an element of grit and toughness that you get out of hockey that you can take with you into running, and just being tough out there and thinking about how hard it can hurt or how much it can hurt and how hard it can be. And the other thing would be the different seasons. So I liked having hockey as my main sport in the winter. And then when spring came around and hockey was starting to finish, I would get into the running again. And then the running would end, you know, in the fall and get back into hockey. And I liked having the two sports, not necessarily, you know, being in the thick of them at the same time.
Having a little bit of variation.
Right.
We talk about that a lot in with running, like switching it up and stuff.
Exactly.
How was the training for hockey, and does that transfer to the running, like as far as like how hard you would train or...
Well, it's interesting because, you know, hockey is more of a sprint sport, I guess you could say. I know that when I did continue to run just on the side when I played hockey at the University of Guelph, that it helped my fitness. But I definitely have a different physique now than I did when I played hockey. I was bulkier and kind of in the weight room more and that kind of thing. So, you know, some similarities, but different in terms of, you know, I guess aerobic and anaerobic and those kinds of things.
Awesome. And so what was your expertise, I guess, in running at that point? Like what did you find you enjoyed the most?
Well, so when I was in Guelph and I did my 4 years of hockey, running was just basically jogging on the side to stay in shape. And then when I retired from hockey, I knew that I played, you know, for over 20 years and had a good go of it. And we did well. We won provincials 1 year and were fourth at nationals. So I was happy to leave the sport and not look back and think, you know, I had unfinished business, which is what the case was for running. I felt like it was great to go back to running for fun and fitness. I knew that my husband and I wanted to have a family someday. So it was a good sport to go back into, knowing, you know, I did compete at OFSA when I was in high school and did a few road races. So I knew it was something that wouldn't be new to me, with also, you know, kind of an element of the sky being the limit. And so I did my first marathon after I graduated from Guelph. And, you know, like many people, when you're running it, you think, why am I doing this? This hurts. And then you cross the line and you want to do it all over again.
Awesome. And like, what race was that? And like, why did you choose that?
It was the Niagara Falls Marathon in 2002 in October. And I picked it because it was local. The timing was good. After I did my internship in Kingston, we moved to Brantford. So I knew it was close to home. So I don't think we even stayed in a hotel. We probably just drove down early in the morning. And yeah, that was the main reason, just for it being, you know, it had a good reputation as well. And Nicole Stevenson had done it. I think she even won it, I believe. So that was a neat part. Now, I wasn't with Nicole at the time, but I knew of her name.
Right. And I got to sit down with her and have a chat, like I've mentioned. And she spoke very highly of you too, as somebody that she admires, and kind of like your focus and grit. I think she referred, one of the things she mentioned was that, you know, one of, you know, maybe her approach was like to go out slow and then kind of build from there, lock in your race pace, if you will. But she said that you prefer to like lock in that race pace right from the start. And I don't know if that's still how it is today, but maybe you can comment on that.
Well, I think I learned from Nicole Steady Eddie, which is to, you know, not be aggressive. And I've never been one who's, you know, mastered the negative split in, you know, having a faster second half than the first, but definitely knowing your marathon pace and trusting it at the beginning, and it will take you through to the end.
Right. And so like after that first race, what was like, were you winning or competing at that point, or like what level were you at that point in time?
Oh, I was completely recreational. I remember getting on the bus and sitting down on a yellow school bus, and I felt like a child going to school for the first day of kindergarten. And my husband was on the sidewalk waving, and I'm waving, and the tears are streaming down my face. And so, yeah, definitely not the level that I'm at now, but I was doing it like many people, just to do your first marathon. And then it became a passion. And, you know, after you do your first, you think, oh, I could run a little faster. And so you train a little bit harder and you set your next goal. And then you just keep doing that over and over. And here I am 17 years later, still doing that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy. Yes.
and like, I think like you're saying, like many, that's kind of how it goes, right? Like you're just kind of going out there and seeing what's what and how you feel. And after, like you say, after you feel great. Were you self-coached at that point? Or
yes. Okay. Yes. I have always run with the Runner's Den group in Paris. Deb Jones owns that, and have some really good friends there that I've run with for years. So it's really special that I've, you know, made it to the Olympics and had some successful races, and still those friendships are just golden. And I think that's what a lot of people can relate to, is that I can be anywhere in the world running an amazing race, but what we love the most is going for coffee after those friends, you know, after we finish our long run, and just keeping in touch with them in the week, like what time are we going to meet and how far are we going? And that's, you know, that part is special no matter what level you're at. And I love it.
It's always like the post run stuff for me too.
Right.
That's like, okay, where are we going to eat?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So is there, like, what were some challenges early on in your running that stand out to you? And like, when did you start realizing that, like you mentioned the Olympics, and that's huge to go to the Olympics and, you know, running Boston podium, being on the podium in Boston, like all these things, like, I'm just curious, you know, and I think about potential a lot, and I ask people that question quite often. We can get into that later, but when did you start to... Like, what were the challenges, and kind of like, where did you realize that you could break into this?
Mm-hmm. I think a breakthrough for me early on, where I knew I could take it to the next level, was on Mother's Day in Mississauga. I did the marathon and I won it. And that's when I got the title of Canada's Marathon Mom. And I remember, you know, getting prize money for being the first place female. And my husband later on that day said, you know, have you ever thought about getting a coach, not just, you know, following online training programs? And I thought, well, not really, but yeah, let's talk about it. So we did. And we knew that I wanted to stay home with the kids and just work part-time as a dietitian. So that's something that I could do, is train during the day and, you know, still be at home with them and do some work. So that's when I started to search for coaches and found Nicole Stevenson and contacted her, and we met, and she looked at my training so that she knew kind of where I was coming from. And one of the first things that she said was, she saw my mileage, it was 60 on average per week. And she said, well, this is miles, right? And I said, no, that's kilometers. So I think she was, you know, impressed that she had, you know, a lot to work with in terms of gradually getting that a little bit higher and, you know, working toward the next goal. And I mean, it's been a very gradual process. So I think it was probably here in Ottawa in 2010 that I knew I could take it even to a higher level, because I ran 2:39, and that was national championships, and I won that. And then we had our third child after that. So that was kind of another breakthrough at that point.
Awesome. And do you think that, like, has having kids through this whole process, has that been a challenge for you? Cause you know, it definitely, I mean, you have to go through that. You've been through it three times now, but Is it kind of like you've mastered the training and how that all works together and how to recover and come back?
Well, it's interesting because our oldest is now 13. It's hard to believe. But back in the day, we didn't know a lot about what was safe for pregnancy and running and being an athlete. And I just remember thinking I had completed the Boston Marathon for the first time and I was pregnant shortly thereafter and I had returned to running. And so I took the pregnancy test and it was positive and, you know, we were happy and excited. And then I already had my running gear on. So I thought, well, I ran yesterday pregnant. Why can't I run today? So my midwife was supportive and my husband was supportive. And we just kind of went by feel in terms of, you know, if anything starts to hurt, slow down or stop and, you know, be hydrated and do all those things to take care of yourself. So I learned to kind of master listening to my body when I was pregnant. And I think I did a half marathon when I was 6 months pregnant with him. And then didn't do any marathons between my first and second. I had a little bit of that sciatica that's common in pregnancy. And then, you know, when it came to the third, I think, yeah, by that point, I had kind of mastered it. But the benefit of being pregnant was that it gave me a break from the competitive running. So I knew I can still stay in shape and cross train and enjoy being active, but it's not for speed or for anything in that sense. And when you return from a pregnancy, you're passionate to get back out there and to return to where you were. Just give yourself time to do it. Mm. So then later when the injuries came, I treated them like a pregnancy. Get through it and recover and your body will go back to what it remembered before.
Right. And what were those injuries? Like, what was that?
Well, the biggest injury would have been when I fractured my femur in Montreal at the half marathon in 2014. So just over 5 years ago, where I knew that would be, you know, a significant amount of time that I'd have to recover. But surprisingly, it was just 11 and a half months after I did that, that I got my standard for the Olympics. So yeah, you know, sometimes you can surprise yourself and recovery can be smooth and sometimes it's not so much. I think it's, you know, I say to people, if you want an injury, break a bone, that's the best way because it's black and white. You have to stop, no weight on it and listen to what your doctor says, let it heal and then resume running slowly. It's those soft tissue injuries that are the difficult ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And you say like after you qualify for the Olympics, like, so were you expecting that? Was that the plan? Like, especially coming off an injury, you know, mentally, sometimes it's tough to kind of say, where am I at? And I haven't competed in a while and all this stuff, but there's also that, you know, you've had that time to rest too and properly like come back strong. So was
right.
That part of the plan or?
Well, back in 2012, Lanny Marchant and I went over to Rotterdam to try to get the standard that year. And that was kind of a last minute plan for both of us in that she had only run a few marathons and I was just coming back after having my third child. So wasn't sure what to expect, but we were really fit and we went and ran. I was 232 low and she was 231 high. So we knew we had, you know, marked our spot on the international stage in terms of Canadian female runners, which was amazing. So in 2013, she set the Canadian record of 2:28 and I was about 32 seconds behind her. So we knew that we were capable. So by the time Rio came around, obviously the hiccup between 2013, where I ran 2:28 and getting the standard in 2015 was the fractured femur. But you know, I remember Alex Hutchison interviewing me about muscle memory and everything seemed to be coming back to form. And I know that after I had my surgery to get the screw placed in, my goal was just, okay, can I walk? Can I walk without a limp? Can I jog? Can I run? Can I run at 1 kilometer race pace? And then I just built from there. And so everything came together smoothly. And so it wasn't really a surprise that I made the standard for the 2016 Olympics. The surprise was more the injury that happened in between that and my 2:28.
Yeah. Well, 2:28 is like blistering fast. Like,
yeah, it's been a while now.
Well, yeah, that's it's quite some speed. Like, my best to date is 2:45. And I'm like, I can't picture another.
I don't know that I can either, but
I'm sure you could. Well, so what's the Olympic experience like? Can you kind of shed some light on that? And like, I can imagine it's just like I thought for me, Boston's like the biggest deal ever, but I'm sure when you're on the Olympic stage, it's kind of like next level.
Well, I remember being in the Olympic Village and looking around, seeing all sorts of athletes from different countries and doing different sports. And I thought, you know, they're just people like you and I who, yeah, they're amazing at what they're doing and they are their country's best. And that's why they're there. But, you know, we all go home at the end of the day and go to bed and get up again. So I just remember thinking, like, it's an honor to be here. I'm blessed incredibly to be running and to be fit and healthy. And I just kind of absorbed it, but I wasn't starstruck by anyone or anything. I just, my family was there, which made it an amazing experience. And I enjoyed being in the Olympic Village and watching my other athletes from Canada compete. But I don't think it was overwhelming, and probably just being pretty experienced already at marathoning helped me with that. Running the world championships in Russia was a good experience, just to compete at a major championship, to see how things are done, and, you know, seeing people from other countries that are in similar shape as you, and knowing that everyone has a different background and story, which made it interesting. But I mean, yes, it was definitely amazing being at the Olympics. And you know, definitely the highlight was just having my family at the finish and running over to them and hugging and embracing. And yeah, that was amazing.
I was going through your Instagram a little bit and I saw the post that you did recently about your kids' recollection, I guess, of...
Yes, my daughter's, yes. Her memories are, you know, she loved the M&Ms that my sister gave her at bedtime. And then at the end, then they found out a girl cheated and she was kicked out. So my mom was 34th. The end.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Which is actually 33, right?
I know. Well, and it could be even lower, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess they're, that's a big thing at those stages, and mm-hmm. like pressure's on for a lot of these people competing. And would you say that the Olympics was your greatest accomplishment as a runner, or...
You know, I like that I have a variety of different accomplishments, I think. I mean, I've certainly had my share of lows, like running at the World Championships in 2013, where I collapsed in the heat, was definitely a disappointment. I was in 227 shape, but went out too hard in the heat and humidity that I wasn't ready for. And then, you know, prepared for the heat and humidity in Rio, which went well. So I would say definitely the Olympics would be a top moment. I mean, getting third in Boston in 2018 at the age of 41 was a definite highlight. Coming behind Lanny to get the second fastest Canadian at the time at the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon was a highlight. Yeah, I mean, it just kind of keeps, every chapter in the book seems to be more interesting than the one before. So I just am, you know, glad to be on this journey.
Yeah, it's a fun one to be on, I guess. You know, a lot of things that, you know, it comes down to, you work hard for things we love, and the passions, that it sounds like it's definitely there. Can you, I mean, because I raced Boston too that same year, and I mean, like, I took a later bus to get there so I could avoid the rain. Like, so there's so many things that go through your head. Can you kind of like walk us through that day, and like was that what you were expecting, or did you think you had a better chance because of that weather at the time? Or like?
Well, my goal going into the race was to be smart and strong and be patient and wait for the hills, which it was going to hurt more in the later stages of the race where the hills are. Around the Bay, Hamilton 30K race prepared me for that. So I did that, I think, 3 weeks before. So mentally, I knew that's when I was going to start to, you know, give it my all. And I didn't have great, you know, huge goals. Definitely, I was not planning to be top three, but I was planning to be top three masters and maybe top 15 overall. So when it got to the race morning, we knew the weather was going to be bad. Like at the technical meeting, often they'll say, okay, when you race, it's not actually going to be as bad as we thought. It's going to come later. No, they were saying it's going to be awful. So when we went out to the bus, I remember that my feet got cold and wet because the puddles were, you know, already pretty deep. And so it was windy and it was miserable. There was, I think, hail at the start. So I remember changing my shoes and socks to get dry shoes and socks on. so that I wouldn't get chilled before the race starts. So I just made sure that I stayed warm. And then when the race started, I remember I was running right beside Shalane Flanagan, and I thought, this is not right. But the race start was so slow, and I thought, well, I can't really run any slower. So the lead pack was just ahead of me. And I mean, you watch the video, you can see my yellow socks and my long purple shirt in the background. And I just kind of stuck with what felt comfortable, and then got to the hills that were rolling. And then two American women passed me. I don't even know when it was in the race, like 38, 39K or something. And I remember thinking, oh, I can go with them. I feel good. So I picked up the pace, chased them, and then I saw them celebrating ahead of me. And I'm like, why are they celebrating? Well, they were passing the women who were to have won the race. So my first thought was, oh, something went wrong. But then I thought, no, like, these people know this race course. They've not gone off the race course. So I just kept running. And then I just, you know, I think my final K was like 3:30, and just really pushed hard at the end and still feeling good, and crossed the line. And Mark, who was one of the volunteers, was going to take me to the hotel to get warm and dry. And I asked him what I placed. And he said, I think you were third. And I said, oh, no, not Masters, overall. And he said, yes, overall. So it wasn't until about 20 minutes later that I actually saw it in writing on Eric Gillis's agent's phone that I believe that I got third at the Boston Marathon.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. And what was your reaction?
Oh, like shock. I didn't believe it. But I knew that those conditions were better for me than for most of the other people that were there. And I knew that training in Canada when it's minus 30 and I have to get my running because I have to pick up a kid from hockey and take the other one to swimming, that's just my life. You can't wait for it to be sunny and breezy out. You know, you get what you get. And so, yeah, I just, and plus my body handled it well. I was prepared for that. I had months of winter ugly running. And so when the day was ugly, then that worked for me.
And so, like, we deal with similar conditions in Montreal. How do you train through the winter? And like, and do you take a big chunk of time off? Let's say like end of the season, maybe December or something, and then get to it? Or what is that?
Well, I will take time off after a marathon. That's, you know, my peak race of any build. And so I'll take, you know, 7 to 10 days off where I don't run at all. But in the winter, no, I'm running in, you know, the thick of it with the snow and the ice and everything else. And I dress appropriately, you know, wear layers. And if it's windy, have, you know, a good jacket. Saucony's been a sponsor of mine for many years. So I've got great apparel that I can wear that keeps me warm and dry. And, you know, adjust my pace accordingly and just get out there and get it done. I'm a morning person. I've got higher energy in the morning. So I wouldn't even want to wait until the end of the day anyways to get a run in if the weather was going to be better. But yeah, that's just the way it is. You take what you get and train in that.
Yeah, that's the most important thing, right?
Right. Like, and then if the race ends up being the way you've trained, then that's perfect.
Yeah. My coaches say train in shit because you might get that and you can't control it because you see people, you know, before a big race, or, you know, they put a lot of work in, and, oh, it's going to rain and it's this and that. Even Boston this year, leading right up to it, they were kind of preparing everybody for, you know, what was last year, which it didn't end up being, right?
Well, it's interesting because I did Boston this year, and what a complete difference, because I placed far lower this year than last year. And you know what? That's what's great about the sport is we can be humbled, and I'm still going to, you know, live my life with grace, whether I'm on that podium or I'm really far away from it. So this year it was 90% humidity and at the start, and I found out about a half an hour before the race, and I just thought, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. My body is not prepared for that. So it was great for the East Africans and a lot of the US women from the southern states, because the elite field was like twice the size this year. So I just knew that wasn't going to work for me. And I mean, with the marathon, we put a lot into it for one race. And so there's times where you just have to say, you know what, I that's not the card I was looking for. But last year it was. And so, hey, you know what, I'll take both. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Right. And do you race, is it one marathon a year now? Or?
Well, like two. I mean, well, here we are in Ottawa, and I'm running tomorrow.
Hush, hush.
Yeah. So, yeah, after Boston this year, because I adjusted according to the humidity and just knew it wasn't going to be by day, it wasn't until driving home from the airport the next night that I thought, I still feel fine. Like, you know, sometimes when I had a disappointing race in London in 2017, I knew I just spent a month in Kenya at altitude, and you know, my body was pretty beat up from that because I had some stomach issues and got dehydrated and whatnot. So yeah, I knew that was the end of the season, but this time I thought, okay, I feel fine. So Dave Scott Thomas with Speed River and Guelph is my coach, and I emailed him and he's like, yeah, let's just see how you feel. We'll go week by week. And so I took the first week off like I normally would and then just eased myself into it and had kind of a mini build. And here I am ready to run my, I think it'll be my 18th marathon tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
What is there? What's the plan for tomorrow? Do you have
one? It's interesting because I don't really know. I want to stay in the 230s. I think as long as I can stay in the 230s, then I feel kind of like I'm still in the game. So yeah, it's pretty vague. I mean, I don't really exactly have a set goal, but you know, listen to the body and like any other race, start out conservative, and if I have got more to give later, then push a bit more and yeah, just run a good race. It was nice to kind of come here quietly for a change and just take it easy. My family came to Boston with me and that was fun. And here I am just kind of quiet, you know, took the train. It was just a beautiful ride and yeah, just enjoying it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it was super low key because I was looking for runners to speak to and kind of found out last minute you were going to be here. So like, again, super happy that we get a chance to sit down. Looking back, like over the last little while, what would you tell like a 20-year-old you, knowing everything you know now about nutrition and training and all this?
I mean, I think one thing that has allowed me to succeed, well, mainly is my faith. That's a big part of where I am. I feel God's given me this gift and just, you know, I'm going with the ups and the downs like anyone else. But also just having a variety of things in my life. I think that if you're so focused on one goal and that's all that you have to do, that can be pretty upsetting when it's not going right and you get injured and, you know, you've put all your eggs into the running basket and it's not going to work out. So I'm glad that obviously that I'm married and have a family and that I have a career as a dietitian and I do public speaking. So I'm glad that I've kind of balanced a few balls in the air because it keeps it interesting. And, you know, when I'm out for a run or a workout, that's my focus. When I'm with my kids, that's my focus. And it allows you to appreciate each one and just kind of be balanced overall in life.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And how often, like how long have you been a dietitian for and public speaking?
Well, I mean, I guess the public speaking is something that's kind of gradually happened over the years. So as my success has in marathoning, right? So definitely around the time of the Olympics, you know, there were more requests for me to speak and continue to be, which I enjoy it. And then I've been a dietitian since about 2002 is when I wrote my exam and got my license, I believe.
Okay. And do you deal with a lot of athletes as well? Or
no, not really. I think that for sport nutrition, it's a bit better if you're in a larger center where there's, you know, national funding and athletes that are there to be part of a hub or whatnot. But, you know, the other thing too is I think that it's something that doesn't really have to be complicated. So I think that probably when people meet me, they would probably think, well, I'm expecting her to give me more like a special diet. Whereas I would just say, you know, look, it doesn't have to be as complicated as you think. And when I first graduated and got my license to practice, I specialized in pediatrics. So I would see babies that came home from the hospital on tube feeds or failure to thrive or, you know, different children and the issues that they might face, like some special needs kids. And that was more my nutrition focus. But now that I've, you know, had my kids and running, my dietitian career is a little bit more on the side and less hours. And I work for a family health team and basically do more cholesterol, weight loss, diabetes care than anything else now.
Okay, awesome. And so that creates like a nice little balance for you too, mm-hmm. and not always be in the running all the time.
Yes, yes, exactly. Sometimes you want to get away from it.
Exactly. How has the training changed for you all over the years? Like, you know, like you say, bringing in a family and having your kids growing up too, and like, has it changed at all or
Well, so after I was with Nicole Stevenson, she moved to Montreal, and then I had my third. So I connected with Rick Mannon, who was a local runner, and he coached me for about 5 years, I think. So that was, you know, kind of the next level. He was at the track doing workouts with me, timing them, and everything has been a gradual transition. Now I'm with Speed River, Dave Scott Thomas, who, you know, everyone knows, just amazing. And it's interesting because I went to Guelph and I played hockey there. And now I'm back like 20 years later and he's my coach and I'm still running. So it's neat because when I go there to train, which isn't that often, but my tendency is to still go to the arena and park my vehicle there or, okay, where's the nearest washroom? Oh, it's in the arena. I know where that is. Mm. So that's kind of neat. But honestly, it's just been a slow progression of a little bit more mileage, more speed, trying to go a little bit faster. But now that I'm 42 and aging, you know, it's okay, what can my body still do? What works better? I'm liking the higher mileage, but you can, you know, run a little bit slower if you're on your legs a lot. So right now it's that kind of aging gracefully. And it's like, do I still have it? Or am I ready to kind of maybe go or into trail racing? So it's kind of an interesting spot to be. But I think what I really love with Dave is that never once has he said anything like, well, you're in your 40s. If anything, he's like, well, there's nothing to suggest that you need to slow down, which is neat. Because at the same time, if I do say something that maybe relates to my age, you know, he also absorbs that as well. So it's a really good balance. He's just got so much expertise and experience. And Trent Stellingworth has been amazing as well to help me with my training.
I love that. And it, you know, gives hope to a lot of people too, or like some, you hear people sometimes in their 20s say stuff like that, or like, I can't do that, or I'm tired, or all this stuff. My 30s have been the best years of my life, and you know, meeting my coaches, they started in their late 30s and they went on to do like all these crazy triathlons and ultramans and stuff like that. And it's like the limits of our body, it's really fascinating to see that. And it, mm-hmm. just because you get older doesn't mean you're not going to perform well, or it all comes down to like how much work you're going to be able to do.
Yeah, and it's fine tuning things and knowing what works and you know, trying. I remember Reed Coolsetta said, you know, you can try something new each build. And I think, yeah, that is neat, because you can't do all these new things all at once. I remember when I went to Kenya for my first training at altitude, you know, Dave and Trent were good to say, okay, this is a major new factor for you, so we're not going to do this and that. But I think a key feature for me is to have one complete rest day a week. So that's been really beneficial for me, because when it comes, it's not like I'm exhausted. I think, oh, I need this so bad. But my body's like, yeah, I'm good to just, you know, sleep in. But by the end of the day, I am ready to go at it again. So that's worked well for me.
Okay. Is that something new for you that you?
I would say in the last couple of years, yes, that I have been pretty diligent about one rest day completely per week. Yeah.
Okay. And upping your volume, you were saying like it was getting into like the 180 kind of range.
Right. So I know when I was in Kenya, I had, you know, taken a step up. And I mean, when I was in Kenya, I'm not, you know, driving my kids around to practice in school and cooking meals and cleaning. Like, it was a wonderful experience where I stayed at in Itan at Lorna's camp. And, you know, everything's done for me. So you're training full time and you can, you know, kind of focus on that only. So I know I did 2 weeks of 190. So I thought, okay, I know when I come back, Dave would find it appropriate to give me, you know, a little bit higher mileage at sea level. So this build, this spring for 2019, I did 8 weeks of 180 or higher. But that, you know, if you look, that's been a gradual progression, right? Just like someone less like Leslie Sexton, she's a regular 200 kilometer week runner. And, you know, she's explained to people, well, I've built myself up to that, and that's normal for me. So it's finding what works for everyone in terms of what they feel is their best unique plan individually, mm-hmm. I think.
Because I think that's where people get hurt, right? They want to bump up the mileage. Cause
oh, for sure.
They want to train for a marathon. It's interesting how that goes, right?
Like, right.
You can't just go from 50 to 200. It's,
right.
It's, your body just can't handle
right.
it.
Right. I mean, my first marathon was Niagara Falls, like we talked about in 2002. And I ran it in 3 hours and 28 minutes. 11 years later, I ran Toronto an hour faster. So, you know, that's a lot in those 11 years.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And because like even for me, I mean, I get up to like 100 maybe. I don't know what the right number is per se. Like I follow what my coach is saying. It feels right. Do you find that 180 is a lot, or has it always been like building up to that point, or is that
shortly before that, 160 seemed to be kind of the regular number, but then 180 became normal as well. But I know one of my good friends, Mitch Free, his number's like maybe 150 that he can kind of feel good. And he knows that's what works for his body and he runs well at that. So, you know, more isn't necessarily better.
Okay. And how do you break all that up like in a week?
Well, it's interesting because when I'm up to like 180, I will do maybe two doubles a week, but for the most part, I've been a single day runner. So it would not be unusual to do a 180 kilometer week over 6 days of single runs.
Wow.
Right.
So what is that? What's the math?
It's like 30 a day. Yeah. But then if you figure, you know, if I'm doing a 40K long run, one of those runs is 20. Now that would be like, that would be a pretty intense week. But you know, for the most part, I think when I was training for Boston and well, now Ottawa, I guess, you know, about twice a week, I was doing doubles in order to hit the 180.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And how do you feel for all this? Like, how much do you need to eat? And like, what are you putting in your body that's kind of giving you enough to recover as well? And kind of move forward in your training?
Well, Eload has been one of my sponsors for many years, and they make a great recovery drink, Eload Recovery. It used to be called Emend, and they've got a chocolate flavor, which I love. So I mix it with milk and water and keep it cold. So immediately when I'm done a long run or a workout, I will drink, you know, a large amount of that, and then I'm getting hydrated as well. So that helps with my recovery. But another thing I will have is, especially in the summer, if it's hot and I don't feel like eating, is I will make overnight oats. So I'll use stoked oats. Stone aged is my favorite type that I'll mix with maybe some nuts and some Greek yogurt and some milk and some berries. And that is also good for recovery. But my other meals are just like I would tell anyone when they come to see me as a dietitian, just half your plate vegetables, 25% of your plate would be, you know, whole grain, grains. And then the other 25 would be lean protein. So, you know, I love roasted vegetables like Brussels sprouts, beets, broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, and then maybe some brown rice or sweet potato, and then maybe some beef, chicken, pork, fish with some beans, glass of milk, and that's a typical dinner for me.
I'm getting hungry now.
Yeah.
I've been vegan now for 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what your, like, take is on that, and, like, have you seen anything like performance-wise in the work you're doing?
So I think that it's very individual, like training, in terms of, you know, what your body is telling you to eat. I'm going more towards trusting your intuition, but you still need the science background in order to get there. So I myself, because I've been doing this for so long, I think I know what I need to eat to replenish. When it comes to being a vegan, you just have to be very deliberate about making sure that you are getting the vitamins and minerals that you need, like your B vitamins, zinc, iron, those kinds of things. So it's totally possible, doable. You can perform well as a vegan, but I think that you just have to do a little bit more work to make sure that you're getting the right foods. And I know Jesse, a friend of mine who is a triathlete, he's been vegan for years, and he just, you know, has studied it, knows how to eat, and has been, you know, quite successful in his races. And I mean, there's hundreds of people who are vegan and still performing. And then there's, you know, hundreds who are meat eaters and, you know, can eat a healthy diet as well.
Yeah. It just depends like what your body likes and like what you like too, you know.
Yep.
It's all about balance, I guess, and that, and, like I know Lionel Sanders, I think he probably lives, he's in Windsor, I think.
Yes.
So pretty close.
I know who you mean, yeah.
He switched like temporarily before a big race, I think in Kona, and then he switched back after.
So he's now vegan or not vegan?
He was vegan.
Okay.
And then he went back to just a regular,
his
regular.
And I think that's interesting, right? He tried it to see what it was like and how it worked for him. And you know, maybe his body said, no, you need a steak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What is in race nutrition look like for you? Like what's, like how do you fuel before a race and how do you fuel during a race?
So for about a day and a half before the race is when I'll start to get in my carbohydrates and do my carb load, which, you know, is just eating more rice and pasta than I normally would on my plate and that kind of thing. And then race morning, I typically have just a plain bagel with honey. I drink my Eload, water, coffee. And then race nutrition, I drink Eload hydration mixed with Eload Fly, which is a carb powder, and that's in my bottles. And then to each bottle, I have taped an endurance tap gel. So our first hydration station is at 5K. So I grab my bottle, give it a shake, drink, put the endurance tap gel in my sports top, and I take it 2.5K after that. So then basically from 5K right up until the last station at 40K, every 2.5K, I'm taking in some sort of carbohydrate fuel. When it's warmer, I'm going to be drinking more, but my carbohydrate source will stay the same. It does not depend on the weather. Obviously, you drink more when it's warmer out to get your fluids in when it's, you know, when those conditions are there that day.
Okay, so it's really precise how you're attacking the nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, and I've been doing it for so long, right, that I can mix up my bottles and know what to expect. And but yeah, there's definitely a science to it that you need to practice in your training ahead of time. You know, never try anything new on race day and, you know, pound back a bunch of gels and then you're hunched over with stomach cramps 2K later. You don't want to do that.
Yeah,
but again, like a steady intake of it throughout the race is a good way to go. Yeah.
Awesome. I love Endurance Tap as well.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Love them. Yes.
And they got that sea salt in there and mm-hmm. the ginger too, kind of like settles your stomach a little
bit. Yes.
I remember when I first started racing, I saw an aid station one of these stations and nutrition station, they had these sticks, you know, and they had a white, like I didn't know much about gels or anything. So they had like this, what looked like gel on the stick. And I was like, okay, well they put them on the stick I'll just grab that and take it right off.
I know where you're going with this.
So I had it and then I realized immediately once it was like in my stomach that it was actually Vaseline.
Yes. I've heard people do that before. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. So pretty funny. Is there anything looking back that you can say like was a funny thing that you did when you first started running that you would never do now?
Oh,
either in prep or...
I mean, I can't think of anything on the spot right now. I mean, I think back to one of the first times that I was injured and I started pool running and swimming, and I've done that ever since, even not being injured, because I think it's just a great way to just work on some physio exercises and whatnot. But I remember then I showed up to the pool when it wasn't even a scheduled public swim. And I think, so I came back another time. I had my swim cap on the wrong way. I had no idea how it worked with lanes and what I was supposed to do. And I could run for hours, but I did one lap and I was out of breath. And so, I remember thinking, wow, this sport is way different than what I'm used to. So yeah, that was, I mean, I guess that's the only funny story.
Yeah, the pool's a different ballgame altogether.
It is.
Yeah. Once I got into triathlon, it was like a different world entirely.
Yeah, my second son is a competitive swimmer. And so this summer I thought, oh, I'm going to race him. And so we did one little race just at someone's backyard pool and he beat me. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try hard. Oh, I tried hard and no, he still beat me. So yeah, it's definitely it's an amazing sport.
Right. Are you competitive? Like when you get out there, is it like a different you, somebody that you're not normally, or?
Like, I think so. Yes and no. I mean, I'm not, I don't know how to answer that. I mean, obviously we're competitive. You need to be, you have to want to win it, but like day to day, like playing a board game or cards, I am probably the least competitive. I just have no interest in that. I'd rather just kind of sit back, have a coffee and chat with someone. So I guess it is when it comes to the sport, but I think because I have other things in my life, I also have that balance of, you know, you win some, you lose some, and you move on and learn.
Right. Who inspires you? Who motivates you?
Well, two women that I met at the Wayne Gretzky Sports Center, where I trained many years ago, inspired me when I was coming back from one of my children. I think it was before I had children, because they were in the midst of having their babies. And one of them has 4 kids and the other one has 4 or 5. And Sue and Ginger are their names. And I remember looking at them and thinking, okay, I know I want to have kids and keep running and hitting my goals and working hard and seeing what I can do. And I thought, okay, they're coming to swim or do whatever at the gym and they've got babies at home. I know I can do it too. And honestly, those are the two women that inspired me years ago to just get out there and be able to balance life as a mom and a wife and as a dietitian and still be able to run and succeed while raising kids. I think it's not a professional athlete. I mean, Sylvia Ruger is amazing. She has, we share the same Christian faith. And when I got the second fastest time at the Toronto Marathon in 2013 and Lanny was ahead of me by 32 seconds, I remember like being disappointed. I mean, it was bittersweet. I ran a personal best, but I wasn't the fastest she was. And Sylvia said to me, "It takes more grace than I can tell to play the second fiddle well." And I thought, wow, like I actually asked her to repeat it because I knew it was going to mean so much to my life. So I have been my best, even though being second fiddle, you're not the first fiddler, right? It goes back to, you know, playing in an orchestra and whatnot. And I was my best at even though second best. And so that has been an inspiring part based on how she kind of came into my life and how I've moved forward with that being a big part of my story when I do public speaking, especially to young children, because likely most of you in this room aren't going to win a big event. But if you're second or you are your best and you're last, that is the best you can be. So yeah, that's kind of a special part.
I'm really happy you mentioned that, because again, that's one of the other things I saw on your Instagram. I was going through and I felt.
Yeah.
That was an emotional thing to read. Even as somebody that's not on the podium, it's interesting because, you know, everyone's going out there this weekend and everyone's got these goals and we stress out and like we want to do so well, but but sometimes like you take what you can on the day, you know, and it's nice to hear that from you. Like, yeah, you came in second, but you did something still very amazing, and that a lot of people won't ever get a chance to do, you know?
Yeah, it's all making choices about how we are going to respond to that. Because again, this goes back to my faith, where I know people are going to look at me, how I react after a big win or after a big loss. And I know they're going to think, well, how does she react after that disappointment? How was she after Boston when she was third? And how was she after Boston when she was 46th the next year? I hope that they see I'm still that same person who is... It's all about gratitude and being so thankful that I've been blessed to have this life. I can go out and do it and making choices. Running down Boylston when I did as poorly as I did this year, well, was completely different the year before, but I'm going to still smile and show grace that, this is an incredible sport that we can be doing and just, you know, giving our all and knowing that we'll probably have another try at it.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you plan on going back to Boston? Is that something that you want to do again?
You know, I love Boston. I've done it 3 times now. So I'm probably thinking, you know, I might try something different, but I mean, obviously the big thing now is qualifying for Tokyo, in that I'm at a sweet spot in my life where I've been to the Olympics and women's running is so competitive now in Canada. And I'm thrilled that there's 9 people right now that have the world standard of 237 or faster. And I'm that 9th person. That's great. For so long, it was just Lanny and I. It had been 20 years since anyone had represented Canada for women in the marathon at the Olympics. So that's great that happened. So moving forward, I'm not really sure what race will be next. But I'm just glad that I have kind of perspective and I know, okay, I'm still going to go out there and be my best, but what comes from that, I'll just be, you know, always choose to be positive with seeing the glasses half full. And that was, you know, that was my outlook when I was in the hospital, when I fractured my femur, was just to be positive about everything in life, looking at the good.
Do you embrace that? I mean, you're obviously one of the best female runners in the country. Somebody that I'm sure a lot of men and women look up to, and aspire to be a lot like. Is that, do you feel like that's a pressure? How do you deal with that? Is it a sense of responsibility almost that you feel, or do you just do your own thing?
And I think it's more, I'm honored, and it's not like I take the role seriously, but I'm pretty deliberate about the messages that I post on social media to always be positive. And I'm not this, you know, tweeting constantly and getting into these conversations and arguments about things. But I think it's just being honored that I know, like when I went to the Olympics, I had messages from moms, like from PEI all the way, you know, out to BC. And I just remember thinking, that is pretty neat that I have, you know, these people that support me. And I will get a message that I see from someone that I have never met, and what they write, sometimes it's exactly what I need to hear at that time. And it's so meaningful and it sticks in my head. I remember when I went to Kenya and I was leaving for a month and I was bawling my eyes out because I'd never left my kids for that long. And someone wrote to me through Instagram, I think, a message that was just perfect timing and perfect words for me to read that. You know, you're doing something. It's good for your kids to see it. It's good for you. And, you know, we're so proud of you. And I forget what it was, but it was just very special to have that support.
And these are all like people that you don't know, I guess. And
a lot, for sure. A lot of them are. And then I've met her. So sometimes it's neat because if I write it in my blog, which I blog regularly, and if I meet them later and they say, actually, that was me, I was the one that sent you that, then I'm like, oh, wow, thanks. But it's funny, I still have not met yet the woman from Montreal who, when I fractured my femur in the race and I was hobbling, you know, hopping on my good foot for the remaining like 500 meters or whatever it was, she yelled out, crawl if you have to. and I've never met her. So whenever I do my talks, I'm like, well, if anyone here said that, I'd love to meet you.
We'll try and find her.
Yeah. Hey, you're from Montreal. Right. Hey, she can send me a message. I'd be glad to thank her for.
Hopefully she listens to
yeah,
this.
Yeah, that'd be great. You never know.
Yeah. What's a message that you would like to say back to all the people that kind of support you and share those kind words with you? Like, is there something that you say in your public speaking that, like, a message that you would love people to know?
Oh, that's hard to kind of come up with just one thing. But I mean, maybe I'll go back to, I think it was a Facebook memory that I just posted the other day. And there's a picture of me at a water station with my two boys. And my daughter at the time was 2 months old, and I had just run a 16-kilometer race, the Elvenston-Watford Road Race, back in my hometown where I'm from. And I look at it, and I'm my weight is higher. I'm breastfeeding a baby, and it's my third child. And I just posted it saying, you know, I looking at it now, I can't believe I did it, but that's what I wanted to do and you know, prioritized. And I think it's just encouraging people to know there are better days, set those goals, and just be all you can be. And, you know, sometimes a ball will fall when you're trying to juggle many balls in the air, but enjoy the experience and don't think you have to master everything all at once. You know, there's times where I see dog hair in the corner and I don't get up to get the vacuum because I've just done 35K and I'd to be quite honest, I'd rather do another 35K before I start vacuuming the house. But, you know, just enjoy it, which is pretty cliche, I guess. But you know, gratitude. Gratitude is a big thing. I'll just end with that.
For sure. And your own kids, are they looking at mom and saying, like, do they understand kind of what you're doing and kind of the level?
Yeah, I think they do, especially as they're older and, you know, it's interesting to see, and I'm honored and blessed to see them doing sport and loving it. So yeah, they're supportive, but you know, when they were younger, it was still, oh, what did you bring home? Like, you know, what's in your race kit bag, and you know, the free samples and whatnot. But now, like, you know, they're older, they can track me running and they can, you know, look up times and see pictures and that kind of thing. So it's, but I'm still mom. Like, I still come home and, you know, I'll be back making lunches Monday morning after hopefully finishing the Ottawa Marathon, like the day before. So that's, you know, that's who I am. I'm mom at home, but yet, you know, kind of a neat mom, I guess, because, you know, they got to come to the Olympics and watch and that kind of thing.
It's about a lot of things, something a lot of kids don't get a chance to do. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'll end on this. What does running mean to you?
You know, I would have to quote Eric Liddell. I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. So that is what running means to me. And it's a gift. It's, you know, especially when you've been injured, you really appreciate what you had when you don't have it. So the fact that I've been healthy for quite a while now, I'm blessed and honored. And, you know, I love it. I'm passionate about it. I'm motivated to do it. And it's just who I am. And it goes back to the beginning when my mom would lock me out of the house and I would run laps. I'm still running those laps.
And it's nice to see that, you know, it doesn't sound like you've forgotten where you've come from either.
Right. Yeah, true.
Kind of like you can see, I love it when you can kind of see things coming full circle and, and like really appreciate where you are and the journey that you've been on to get there. I think that's like a really important thing. Where can people find out more about you and follow you and read this blog?
Yeah, well, my website is KristaDuchesne.com, and just, I think there's one little thing you can click on for blog. And usually I write after a race, I will write. So, you know, I typically race kind of once a month when I'm preparing for a marathon. So I will probably have something posted shortly after Ottawa. We'll just see how it goes. And every chapter seems to be quite unique and different. So we'll see what tomorrow brings.
Obviously. Yeah, that's great. And again, I really appreciate you sitting with me today, and we wish you the best of luck for the rest of, you know, well, for tomorrow and the rest of your career. And, you know, can't wait to see where you get up to next.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been nice. Yeah, it's nice to chat.
Thanks. This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit their website, iamarunner.ca, and check their Instagram, at WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram, at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.